Kinois. Kinois on Tisha B'Av. The mimic to recite Kinois on Tisha B'Av in some related matters. Okay, what is the ultimate, everybody say, please. What is the ultimate Kinois? What are all of the Kinois that we say on Tisha B'Av, what are they patterned after? The answer is the ultimate Kinois is Eicha. Sefer Eicha or Megillas Eicha is called by Chazal Megillas Kinois, or it's the Sefer Kinois. It is called what Yirmiyah composed, this Megillah. As we mentioned this morning, there are five Pirakim in Eicha. And it was not written all in one time. It was written over a period of time. And according to many opinions, the first perek, or some learn the first three perakim of Megillas Eicha, was presented to Yehoyakim. He was from the last kings of Klal Yisrael, the Talmud Chum Bayis Rishon, and he took it, and they read a pasuk by pasuk, and as they read pasuk by pasuk, he threw it into the fire. He burned it. And that was a terrible chil Hashem to actually go and to destroy, to burn the word of Hashem, what the Navi wrote, to mamish, to burn it in the fire. It gives an entirely new meaning to the kina that we say on Tisha B'Av, Shali Sirufa Be'esh, the burning of books, book burnings. Okay, we spent some time with this. That Erev Shabbos Sukkot, there is a custom to fast every year on Erev Shabbos Parsha Sukkot as a zecher for what happened in the year 1242, when the Church of Notre Dame burned 24 cartloads of Sfarim of Torah Shebal Peh. Mainly Talmud manuscripts. This is before the 300 years before the invention of the printing press. Manuscripts. There were 24 cartloads of Sfarim, and they were destroyed. It gives a whole new flame, and that event certainly became a precedent for, unfortunately, many different stories in Jewish history of book burnings. One of the worst events in more recent times was in the Holocaust, where the yeshiva of the Chachmei Lublin had a magnificent library that was collected by Rav Meir Shapiro, the one who was the founder of the Daf Yomi, and the Nazis knew about this library, and they publicly destroyed, burnt the whole library in public. And there were many, throughout history, there have been many stories like this, but it's interesting, who was the first one to burn books? None other than the Jews themselves. The Jews themselves burnt books, and the book that was burnt, was, in disgrace, was Megillas Eicha. Megillas Eicha was burnt by none other than the king of Klal Yisrael, Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda. Why? Because it said that because he disagreed with Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah was not very popular. Yirmiyah was telling them that if you don't shape up, there's going to be a Churban Beis HaMikdash, and he was scaring the people. Yirmiyah was a very powerful, influential person, and he was telling them that if you don't behave, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be a Churban. Yirmiyahu began to prophesy at the time of Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu, how many years was this before the Churban? About 50 years before the Churban, something like that. Yoshiyahu was the king for 31 years. And after Yoshiyahu, there was another 22 years until the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Yirmiyahu began his prophecy. This is the Haftarah of last week. In which year?
13th.
That's the 13th year. The 13th year. So how many more years was there before Yirmiyahu until the Churban Beis HaMikdash?
Your 18
plus another 22, 40 years. Right, exactly 40 years. Yirmiyahu began to give over his prophecy exactly 40 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, and as he gave over his prophecy, there's going to be a Churban. He wrote down Megillas Eicha. And Megillas Eicha was presented to the king. What's going on? This person is influencing people to be scared and to challenge my authority. And Yehoyakim publicly burnt Megillas Eicha. Possibly that's the first time in Jewish history when a Sefer of Hashem was burnt b'derech b'zoyoyim. Now, you want to really want to go back, you can say that the first time a Sefer was burned was Shviras Haluchos, Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Mm-hmm. Moshe came down with...
He broke the
Luchos, he shattered the Luchos. Moshe Rabbeinu, he shattered the Luchos. He came down from Shemayim with a written version of the Torah. And that is the Aseres HaDibros on stone, and he took it and he broke it, he shattered it by the mountain. Shock therapy. And when Moshe Rabbeinu broke, shattered the Luchos, he did not shatter the Luchos b'derech b'zoyon. He did it because that's what had to be done. It was a necessary shock treatment for Klal Yisrael that you're not worthy, you are not worthy of the Aseres HaDibros. The Aseres HaDibros was equivalent to something being written. It was etched in stone. And Moshe destroyed the Luchos. But that does not count as a book burning, because that was done by none other than Moshe Rabbeinu himself for a reason, for an important reason. But Yehoyakim, he took a Sefer from a Navi that was written to give Musar to Klal Yisrael, and he burnt it. He burnt it as a way of saying, I don't believe in this, I don't value this, and he disgraced it. And there's no question that what he did certainly created an opening. It's like, you know, Amalek, no one would dare attack Klal Yisrael. No one would have the chutzpah to attack Klal Yisrael until Amalek came along. Amalek came along and they attacked. They were burnt. They cooled off the bath. But they showed the world that it's possible that you can take, that you can start off and you can attack Klal Yisrael with the Am HaNizchah. Yehoyakim did something that's just unbelievable. He showed the world that you can take the holy books of the Jewish people and you can destroy them. And nothing is going to happen to you. Nothing will happen to you. That's what he demonstrated. And that demonstration trickled down throughout Jewish history again and again throughout all the ages. And one thing that we focus on is the book burning of what happened on Erev Shabbos Parshas Sukkos, Tes Tammuz, in the year 1242, when 24 carloads of some were burnt. And by the way, who is responsible for them being burnt? A Jew! Nicholas Donin. Nicholas Donin was once a Talmud who sat before his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Mikariz. He sat as a Talmud before the Rebbe. He was a student. He was a Shomer Torah Umitzvahs. A Jew! And that's why he was so dangerous, because he knew too much. And he had a falling out with his Rebbe. He started doing some radical things, had radical ideas. The Rebbe told him to behave. He didn't want to behave. The Rebbe put him in Shanta. He put him in Cheirim. And then he ultimately left. He left and he made trouble. He made trouble to the point where one day he came back to destroy the Jewish people. And he had a disputation with his Rebbe, Rabbi Chilvi Padiz, and other Talmidei Chacham of the time. And ultimately, of course, it goes without saying that the Rabbi Chilvi, he won the debate. But our enemies could not take it. They cannot deal with defeat. And as a like a child acting out, they took the Talmud Bavli and they burnt it. They destroyed it. So it's just history repeating itself. A Jew, Yehoyakim, an influential Jew. He was the king. He burnt the Torah. He burnt the words of the Navi. And here again, in all these years later, the terrible, terrible consequence, the ramifications of the Sreifas HaTalmud. So when we read that particular kina, it's very interesting. We have to go back and understand that the ultimate kina on Tisha B'Av is Megillas Eicha. Megillas Eicha is called by Chazal Sefer HaKinois, the Book of Lamentations. Kinois. And we read it at night only. That's our custom. We read it at night only b'tzibur, because it says in the Megillah, Bochoy Sivke Balaila. She will cry at night. And what else? There are other psukim which tell us that it should be written specifically, Kumi Roini balayla. Bachoy sifke balayla. The proper time to read the kina of Eicha is at night. Now there is a minog, there's a shalah. The shalah says that you should also, since this is the Iker Sefer of Kinos, it should be read by day as well. And in fact, if you look around in the newspapers, it seems becoming pretty popular, where they advertise different events where they, you know, people come together on Tisha B'Av to have drashos. They advertise, we're going to read Megillas Eicha by day from a klaf after davening is over. So this is this appears to be a bit controversial, because the shloah says you should only read it b'yachidus. The minig is to read Megillas Eicha by day, not in public, but to read b'yachidus. And the Mishnah Berurah brings it down. The Mishnah Berurah says that it's a good thing. I have to go look at Mishnah Berurah, exactly what he says. So, but even though it's true that people today are Nizar, they are Machmir, became an Achshrei Dori, people became, it's a new custom, people start saying Megillah by day, it's not so simple that you should say Megillas Eicha in public. The Shloah that promotes, that's really the Makar promoting, you say Megillas Eicha by day, he says explicitly that it should be read by the Yechidus. He writes here, nearly, Minog Toiv, Kol Yochid V'Yochid, Yachzor V'Yikra, Megillas Eicha L'Mochar, Beinoi L'Bein Atzmai, privately. Kili Olam Inyan Hayoim Odif, because by day there is more Toikiv. It's similar to Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther is reading at night, and we read it a second time by day. So Megillas Eicha, there's also an Inyan to read it by day, but again, he only says to read it, privately. So again, the Iker Yisoid is Megillas Eicha is the Iker Kina of the day, the Iker Kina of Tisha B'Av. And it's read primarily at night because of these two psukim, b'choy sifke balayla, kumi roini balayla. This expresses the lament of Klal Yisrael. Now, why indeed is it so chashuv? So, the Mefarshim explained something very interesting, is that when you look at Megillas Eicha, it doesn't just tell you about the tzara, it tells you the reason. It tells you, hidden into the words of the Megillah, it tells you why. That's the greatest challenge we have today. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why did the Holocaust happen? Whenever you hear someone telling you the reason why it happened, you know you're in a lot of trouble. If someone gets up and will tell you, I know why the Holocaust happened, I'm going to tell you why. I know why it happened. I know why COVID happened. I know why. When you hear people talking like this, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a really, really lot, because we all know that no one knows why. And sometimes just a matter of how you nuance it. But unfortunately, there are people out there that are very confident with themselves, and they're going to tell you why bad things happen. And there's a very good reason why people fall into that trap. Because Baruch Hashem, today Klal Yisrael, they study Daf Yomi. And we are obsessed, Baruch Hashem, in a very good way with the study of Talmud Bavli. And in Talmud Bavli, the Gemara always presents the answers to the questions. The whole study of the Gemara is to know the why. Why does the Mishnah say this? Why does the Mishnah say that? Why does the Brai say this? And there's a thirst to know the answer. And then when the Gemara goes off on tangents and talks Divrei Agada and tells us about Harugei Beitar and tells us about the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara will always tell you why. You know why the Churban Beis happened? Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shlichas Damim. Do you know why the Bayis Sheni happened? Because of Shlichas Damim. Do you know why this happened? Because of this reason. So what happens is we get into a frame of mind where if the Gemara is always telling us why things happen, so we also know why things happen.
It's the same
reason. What?
It's the same reason.
There's no... Today there's Avodah Zarah where you see people bowing down to idols?
Yes. Absolutely.
Money?
Does it have to be all three? It could be one of them, two of them.
After the Churban, after the Chasimas HaTalmud, after... But that's not Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael's not... You don't see the problem of Klal Yisrael today. Yeah, good convention. The topic is Buddhism amongst Orthodox Jews. It doesn't seem to be the main problem in Klal Yisrael that there are Jews, there are Orthodox Jews that are privately in their basements practicing Buddhism. You don't see that. That's not the issue. After the Chasimah Satalmud, after the Rabbanan Savaroi, no one knows the answer to anything. To anything. Not even the simplest thing. There's a differentiation between the Tekufa of the Talmud. The Tekufa of the Talmud was Chachamim. Chacham Odif Minavi. After the Chasimah Satalmud, which includes even the Rabbanan Savaroi, it's over. It's over. No one today, any new event that happened, there's no one that can say they know the reason why. Rashi never, anywhere in all of his works, never said why the First Crusade happened. Doesn't tell you why. There is no reason why. None of the Rishonim ever told you why it happened. So how can we come along today and say, we know why it happened, we know why the Holocaust happened, we know why COVID happened. If the Rishonim, who had in their lifetimes, had the incredible tzaras, Rabbi Yechiel Miparis, he never on record did he ever say why it happened, there was the Sreifa Satalmud. Doesn't say. He was involved intimately in what was going on. He was the one that defended. Do you have any record of him ever saying, I know why the tragedy happened, why the Talmud Bavli was incinerated? We don't have that. We don't have that. We don't have. So therefore, we today think we're going to be able to understand the reason why things happen in our lifetime. But why do we fall into that trap? Because when you learn a Daf Gemara, the Gemara is telling you why things happen. So we think that we can extrapolate, we can be the same. That's clearly not the case. So going back, let's review the Yisrael. The Yisrael over here is Tisha B'Av.
What the Amar Ben El said. What
you
just said.
Okay. Tisha B'Av.
We don't. It says they didn't keep Shemitah. Well, what was it? Which one was it? I mean, because you don't know.
That Tukuf of knowing why things happened ended with the Chacham of the Talmud. And let's review our Yisrael. Tisha B'Av is a day when we say Kinas. Kinois, the Iker Kina is Megillas Eicha. Megillas Eicha, the five parakim, it was written in different periods of time. The fourth parak of Megillas Eicha is a hesped on Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu that was killed right before, 22 years before the Korban Yisheni. It's called Sefer Kinois. It's read at night because of the two psukim that we have, the two psukim, Kumi Roni Balayla, Boche Sivke Balayla. It is the Iker. Do we make a bracha on it? Is it Machlekes HaPoiskim? Do you make a bracha on Megillas Eicha? According to Masecht Soferim, you do make a bracha even on a Megillah that's written on paper or whatever type of, even if it's not written on klaf and diyoy with all of the halachas, it's mashma from Masecht Soferim. It's a small Masecht in the back, and some of the Masecht Katanas written by the Rabbanan Savaroi. It is mashma that it is proper to make a bracha on Megillas Eicha, even if it's written on something that is not halachically kosher, like a Sefer Torah, like the way we have our Sefer Torah, and some lane from the Haftarah. You can make a bracha. The minug obviously is not. We don't accept that the halacha. It's not acceptable halacha. We do not make a bracha on a Megillah that is not written kehalacha. Let's say you have in your possession a Megillas Eicha that is written on klaf with diyoy in all of the halachas. Do you then make a bracha? So there are different minhagim. Some do and some do not. One thing is for sure, no one makes a shachiyon. That is for sure. No one is happy that we have reached this man to lay.
Right. Hope next year you won't need it.
Well, It's one of the Chav Dalet Sifrei Tanach, so it's not so part of the next to this.
No, but that's the reason people
think. Now, being that Megillas Eicha is the primary kina, the kinois that we say by day are clearly patterned after the elements that are found in Megillas Eicha. In other words, how many kinos do we have? We have 45 kinos. Okay, in Ashkenaz, which is really just not fair because the truth is that all over the world, in all different communities, there's a different selection of kinos. The Svaridim have a very different collection. The collection they have is very, very different. And in Rome, everyone always writes about the kinos of Rome. of Rome, it seems they have a sacred tradition, a different selection of kines. Different communities, many different communities, each community, there's something which you still have a very great degree of diversity, more so than other things in halacha and our tradition, is the collection of kines that are recited in the communities throughout the world. Amongst us here in Flatbush, there seems to be amongst the Ashkenazim one standard version that is found in the Art Scroll. Art Scroll sort of took over even the numbering system. Even we have even a numbering system today that has become dominant. It used to be the numbering system was different. There was no, years ago there was no numbering system. So you just say this kina, that kina. How do you know? Find the kina? Impossible. You have these little pamphlets, and you know you look where the font size changes. The starter, that's the next kina. Was there a number? There was no number. I think one of the first people that made numbers was Goldschmidt. There's a very big Talmud Chacham, I don't know if he's alive, called the Goldschmidt, the Goldschmidt edition. Everyone quotes it. Some people look at it as the Bible. He wrote a critical, he's one of the first people, Talmidei Chachamim, to write basically a critical edition of kinas. Goldschmidt, the Goldschmidt edition. And basically there are footnotes, and he sources many, many expressions that are found in the kinois to their source, to psukim, various psukim throughout Tanakh. Most of kinois, if you're an expert in the Tanakh, you will notice that the kinois draw heavily upon expressions that are found throughout Tanakh. So match up, this expression is found in Yecheskel, this expression is found in Tehillim, this is found in Eof. It's mamish, a smorgasbord of the entire Tanakh. You want to be a bucky, if you're a bucky in Tanakh, when you read kinois, it's like you're going into a wedding, going to a smorgasbord. It's a magnificent command of Tanakh. An incredible command of Tanakh. So, yet, and even though in general the kinois are expressed from Tanakh, but the concepts and the ideas are all b'liyotzei min haklal, taken from Megillas Eichon. Chazal were very into this. They never ever did anything on their own. All the innovations that they put into Klal Yisrael are all drawn from their predecessors. And when our custom today, here in Chutz Laaretz, and probably by many in Eretz Yisrael, amongst Ashkenaz, those who trace their lineage to the Minhagim of Ashkenaz, have a standard of 45 kinos. 45 kinos. And the numbering system, Art Scroll, put everything in a number, and today, basically, when you refer to a kina, you'll basically refer to kina tezayin, kina yudches, kina lamed aleph. There's a numbering system, and there are 45. Each kina has a unique flavor. Each kina has a unique concept, and that concept is found openly in Megillas Eicha. If it's not found in Megillas Eicha, it cannot be part of the kinas that you say by day. The kinas that are said by day are secondary to the ultimate kina of Megillas Eicha that is recited at night. So just like you have in Megillas, the fourth parak of Megillas Eicha is a hesped on a tzaddik of Yoshiyahu, arguably the greatest king in Klal Yisrael, Yoshiyahu, by Yekoinin Yirmiyahu Yoshiyahu. As an extension of that, we have a kina of the Asara Haruge Malchus, of the Tzadikim, of Arze Halavanam, Adire HaTorah. That is accepted into the 45 kinais because the concept of the Masvid Tzadikim is in Megillas Eicha. We have a kina devoted to Tziduk Hadin. Tzaddik, we have a keen of tzidik hadin, v'lanu boyishas aponim, Okay, how do I don't remember all the kinas by heart. There, every single kina that we find in the 45 kinas of the day are rooted in the principles and concepts that you're going to find in Megillas Eicha. And you know, therefore, you know, that's why there are some people who hold that the kinas are sacred, are very, very sacred, and you must say every single one. You're not allowed to miss even one kina. You have to say every single kina. And you're not allowed to add. Don't become a composer and decide, oh, I'm going to embellish the kinas with my ideas. Because who says that your ideas are found in the Iker Kina? The Iker Kina is Eicha. You have to study Eicha, go through all of the concepts that are found in Eicha, and if you don't find in Eicha that concept, then that's not called a Kina. You have no right to embellish the Kinas. Okay, for the Holocaust, so not everyone takes this so literally. Today, it's almost extremely rare today to go to a shul where they say all of the kinas. It's becoming more and more rare. Even the shuls that years ago would say all the kinas, today don't even do that. Today they have someone who speaks and selects certain kinas. They still, in the yeshivas, they say all of the kinas. Like, I remember when I was in Kim, Mogen Avram, 100 years ago, so they said all the kinas, every single one. Little kids, you know, on the bar mitzvah. And if you need to, it took a very long time, the counselors and the staff, and they had some, I remember vaguely, they had some speakers, there were people who got up, they gave it to each counselors, that you're gonna, they prepared very well, the counselors, they were very, very, they were Talmidei Chacham, they were Bnei Torah, and they would give out, you're gonna say a drosh on this kina, a 5-minute drosh, and you say a drosh on this kina. They would select a couple of kinas, and before we said that kina, they got up and they spoke. They spoke to the whole, it was a big crowd. It was a very big camp. It was a very big camp those days. And they gave a drasha for 5 minutes. What is this kina about? And then everyone said the kina. And then they kept on saying, and a little bit later, another kina, someone got up to speak. But he said every single kina. It was so boring, you can't even imagine. It was torture. He needed to go out, so you counsel and you go out for 5 minutes. I highly doubt there's any camp today in America where they do that anymore. Where on Tisha B'Av, you sit in shul on the floor, you take 200 campers, and you sit them on with little kids, and you sit on the floor for 3 hours, and you torture them, and you just look at a page, and you have no clue what it says, no clue, and you just sit and you look at the walls, in the hot, in the heat, pray they probably have good air conditioning, but in those days there was no air conditioning, and the cows every once in a while. Okay, but it used to be you would say every single kina. Today it became, you know, in America, everything has to be very easy, very good. You have a drasha on this kina, we skip this one, we skip that one. You go to shul, we give you a piece of paper, we're only going to say these 10 kinas. Okay, it's a different type of attitude. But Meikar Hadin, the kinas of the day are expanding upon the concepts of what it says in the Megillah. I have a very good line over here where he explains all of the concepts goes through every single concept that is found in Megillas Eicha, which is what we draw from to say during the day. Let me see if I can find it over here. These words, very nice. I'm reading from over here. This is very, very fascinating. This is a new keynote that was published last year. Okay, called Kinois called by Hamavur. No, whatever. Just it's a Hamachza. The Hamachza for you know, you have.
Who's the publisher?
The publisher is Meiros Publishing Incorporated. Meiros, Meiros. Am I pronouncing it correctly? Meiros. Meiros Publishing Incorporated. It's called Kinois Kolboy Hamivua. There are a lot of kinois out there. This is brand new, and they have a commentary in Hebrew on the side. Okay, it's nice. I didn't find it to be super spectacular. It's nice. There are a lot of other things out there. The lettering is, you know, the presentation is very, very nice. The parish is very nice. It's very light, and they have some nice footnotes. But the Hagdama is magnificent. Okay, the Hagdama, I think the whole koyach of this, and they have halachas, I think the whole koyach of this thing is this: these pages. They have a very, very elaborate introduction, and they present very, very beautiful yisrael. There's things that you don't find, that you're not going to see in other star. And it was worth it. And then, if you go through it very, very carefully, the translation and the explanation, everyone who puts out a translation on Kinoi says different things. No two translations are the same. And some of them are very, very different, very interesting how they learn the passage in Kinoi. But here, he says this very beautiful yisrael, which is new to me, and that is, this is an old yisrael, that the Iker Kinois is Megillas Eicha, period. The halacha is, it is recited at night. B'machashakim ha'yishivani kinei sei olam, in darkness, Hashem put us, like the dead. Kinois is said at night. B'choy sifke ba'layla, kumi roini ba'layla. Kinois is said at night from Yirmiyah, who wrote the Iker Kinois. Done. Now it's Boker. Alois HaShachar. It's time to daven. What are you going to daven? So he writes, so now you're going to say, you know what, let's elaborate on the Kinois that we recited last night. You want to elaborate? When you elaborate, you have no reshus to say something that has not been mentioned or discussed in the Iker Kinois. So if you want to go and compose a kina and talk about some type of tragedy, you have to first acknowledge, you have to first find this element rooted in Megillas Eicha. And that's why, if you notice in the kinas that we say by day, the vast majority of them are arranged based upon pesukim in Megillas Eicha. We start with a pasuk, an expression, and we elaborate. And if you don't find the psukim, the concept certainly is found there. You just can't say things on your own. Okay, now, going further in that, he writes something very fascinating. It used to be in the Ashkenaz yeshivas, probably going back to the time of the Gemara, that on Tisha B'Av, in the morning, they did not recite Selichos, but they recited Slichos. A Slichos is not the same as Kinos. And it's not the same as Kroivos. There was a whole world of understanding, a whole world of different types of piyutim. To us, living in these days, these times, it's all the same. There's no chilik between the yoitzrois that you say, those who say it on the dalet parshiyos, and the different piyutim that you recite on the yomim noiroyim, and the piyutim you say by the seder in nirtze, and the kinois you recite on Tisha B'Av, and the slichos that you recite on Tainis Esther, and the slichos you say during Aseres Yimei Teshuvah. You know, the slichos of Aseres Yimei Teshuvah you say before davening, the slichos you say on the dalet tzoymos, the four fasts you say after you finish Shemona Esrei. To us, it's all one mix. It's all just one, it morphs into one thing. Piyutim, slichos, kroivos, it's all the same. It's not all the same. It's not. There are fundamental differences in what you're trying to accomplish, and thus where and how they are said. There's something called slichos, and there's something called kinas. And we unfortunately don't appreciate this, and I don't even really know what I'm saying, just trying to repeat some words over here. And after everything is said and done, this Hadama, the Mechaber of this Hadama, he explains that if we would go back probably 1,000 years, we would learn about a history of where there was a transition in Klal Yisrael to bedafka not recite slichos on Tisha B'Av and instead recite kinas. It evolved. It used to be in the Ashkenazi, the two big yeshivas, we're always referring to, in the Hardah Pumbedisa, where they said slichos. They viewed Tisha B'Av to be a day when a time to sibur. The tsoy, right? Isn't it saying in Nach? It says in Nach. The tsoy, 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 the Tzoyim HaShvi and the Tzoyim HaAsiri. Tzoyim HaAsiri do a different order. But it's a fast day. In Yirmiyah, Tisha B'Av is called a Tzoyim. On a Tzoyim, what do you recite? You recite Slichas. What is Slichas? You recite the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chan Erech Apayim Rav Chesav Yemes Netzachesel La'olachim Nase Om Mefesha V'Chato V'Nakei. The Yod Gimel Midei Sarachan. When we recite Slichos during the Aseres Yimei Teshuvah and Elo and the Dalet Tzoymos, every Slicha, whether you realize it or not, is built around the Yod Gimel Midei Sarachan. Unfortunately, we don't even know what we're saying, so we don't even really appreciate that when we're saying this elaborate Slicha and this the Pizmoim, what connection does it have with the Yod Gimel Midos HaRachamim? But if we were to delve deep into the poems, these compositions that were written with the title Slicha, you don't write a Slicha unless you have in front of you the Yod Gimel Midos HaRachamim. And the Slicha is an elaboration. It is an elucidation. It is an embellishment to the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. On Tisha B'Av, we never say Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. We don't say it. We do say by Mincha. Okay, but Mincha is not. That's already by Mincha. Mincha, that's already, that's in Chanami. That's when we turn, the tide changes. But until we come to Mincha on Tisha B'Av, there's no Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. You do not say Hashem Hashem. The whole thing over here, this whole book, there's no Hashem Hashem Kharachim Vachanun. What happened? There's no Tachanun. The Tachanun is also a Chelke, that's all part of it. There is no, that was not the original way it was. Originally,
it's two aspects, no?
Avelis,
which is
okay. We're not focusing on Avelis now. That you're right. That's all part of it. But let's just first focus on Slichas. Let's analyze that element. That element of Slichas.
Do we want Kapara? Is that it?
No. It's no. We don't want Kapara. No. We're not Shacharis. Not from the time Tisha B'Av begins. Not from the time until we get to Mincha. No. There's no. We're not asking for forgiveness. We're not. That's exactly the point. And that's a modern concept. We don't say slichas in the morning. We don't. We don't say on Tisha B'Av. What?
They at one time say it in the morning. You said at one time they did say it in the morning.
Oh, right. This goes back 1,000 years. 1,000 years ago, in the yeshivas of Sud and Pumbedisa, there was a different approach to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av and what they did has a makor in Tanakh, because it's called the Tzoyim. The Tzoyim HaChamishi. Tisha B'Av in Tanakh is called the Tzoyim of the fifth month, the fifth month of Av. It's a Tzoyim. What do you do on a Yom Tzoyim? You recite Slichos. What are Slichos? These are compositions that elaborate, embellish the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. This was the opinion of the Rabbanan who lived at that time. Then there was a shift of thinking. That, first of all, this concept that it's called the Yom Tzoyim, it's not so simple, because that was during the Churban Bayis Rishon. This is an old thing, that when Yirmiyah said that there's something called the Tzoyim HaRevi, Tzoyim HaChamishi, the Tzoyim HaShvi, and the Tzoyim HaAsiri, that was referring to the Churban Bayis Rishon. And then when the Bayis Sheni was rebuilt, that came to an end. And this that we today continue to do this, it's only a minhag, because since the Bayis Sheni was destroyed, so we go back to the old minhag of what they did during the time of the Churban of the Tzoymais. But it's not the Tzoymais in its full glory. If it was in its full glory, we would have to fast on the Dalet Tzoymais the night before. And we'll be also in the Chomei Shinuyim. You're not allowed to bathe, you're not allowed Sicha, all the other things. So what we do b'zman hazeh for the Dalet Tzoymais is only a minhag. It is not an ikor. But after the Churban Bayis Sheni, for a tekufa, the understanding was we're going to go back and we're going to observe Tisha B'Av as a full-fledged Tzoyim for mechilas avoinos, not avelos, not avelos. And therefore, it's not a day of avelos. Then, what is the proper thing to do? To recite slichos, shachars. When would they recite slichos? Like a regular tzom, when you finish the Shmona Esrei, before you recite Tachnun, of course you would recite Tachnun, you would say slichos, and you would say Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chan multiple times. Then came an era where there was a change. Okay, halacha evolves. This is something which people don't appreciate, that halacha evolves. And there was a change of thinking. And the change of thinking was that it's not, Tisha B'Av is not a day, we're not going to observe Tisha B'Av fully as a day of tzayim. We'll leave the tzayim for mincha. But in the morning, it's going to be called the moed. Kara alai moed lishbar bachurai, which simply means they appointed a designated time to destroy my young men. And Chazal extrapolate from that that Tisha B'Av is a festival. It's a festival. Because on this day is where the roots of Mashiach, the roots of Mashiach are born. Now I want to go diverge. I was reading a fascinating book from Rabbi Errol Wein. Rabbi Errol Wein, he should be live forever, should be good and well, should be healthy and strong. I think it's his last book. He published a book recently about leadership. It's a coffee table book. It's about leadership. What? So this is focused on the years 1820 to 1940. It focuses on that era, the era of 1820 to 1940, and where he describes basically those years are the Jewish people suffered a very great decline. For some unknown reason, in the history of the world, until the year 1840, there was no such thing as reform. Jews were Jews. No, there were people, of course, there were always people who went off the derech, but the derech chlal. There was a loyalty to Yiddishkeit. There was persecution, there were tzaras, but those that remained part of the tribe, all of a sudden, in the year 1840, going from the year 1820 to the year 1940, somehow, beyond anyone's understanding, there was a mass abandonment and challenge to our traditional values. There was the Enlightenment period, there was the rise of reform, and the focus of the book is the great leaders of this era who fought against this era of where no one understands what happened. How could it be that in all of these years, from the time of Matan Torah until this point in time, Klal Yisrael had a lot of problems? But there was
Germany was granting citizenship to the Jews.
But there was other times when there was citizenship where Jews had it very good.
No place ever gave them citizenship. Okay, Germany was the best.
After everything is said and done, it's still a mystery.
So they felt emboldened.
It's still their ideas. He talks about their ideas. And it's, Rabbi Errol Wein, he spent his whole life on the study of history. And he says something, in the year 1940, Klal Yisrael reached, in his opinion, their lowest point in history. Not just, the threat of genocide with Holocaust, the commitment of the masses to Yiddishkeit was an extreme low. The Orthodox community that was loyal to Yiddishkeit was a teeny, teeny minority. And with the Holocaust, we glorify the era of the Holocaust. We make it think that everyone is an Orthodox Jew. It wasn't like that, okay? The Jews that were killed in the Holocaust, they were Jews. They were Jews. But unfortunately, the observance of Torah mitzvos wasn't so simple. It was a very, very low point in 1940. That's where it ends. And yet he says that tekufa That Tekufa was where the seeds were planted for the most incredible growth Klal Yisrael ever saw, is from 1940 until the year 2022. The growth, the explosive growth of loyalty and Yiddishkeit these last 80 years is beyond belief. There was never such an incredible mushrooming of growth for Klal Yisrael, and yet the irony is the seeds of what we have today, this explosive growth of Yiddishkeit, were all planted at what would appear to be the lowest era. What happened in this era between the years 1820 and 1940, although Klal Yisrael as a whole, the challenges were just incomprehensible, yet that's where the seeds were planted for what's happening now to bring the coming of Mashiach, which clearly is in the process, is the Mashiach. So how did I get into this? The diverge is, we're dealing with the kinois. I'm not sure how we got into this. How we diverge into the, I want to bring out a point. Okay, but let's just go back then. We'll hopefully come back to me in a moment. When we deal with the kinois of the morning.
What about evolving?
There are 45 kinois. And the 45 kinois, they draw from Megillas Eicha. And Mamash Kaur is trying to say. Hopefully it will come back in a moment.
Slichas
versus. Oh, good. Okay, good. Right, you got me. Slichas, good. Right, slichas. So it used to be that it was understood that Tisha B'Av is a day. It's a tzoim. It's not a time to be misabel. There is no avelus. We don't have avelus on Tainus Esther. It's not what even the Dalet Tzomos. We don't observe avelus on Shavasa B'Tamos. There's no din of Avelus and Shavasa B'Tamos. It's the beginning of the Bein HaMetzarim, but there's no Avelus. There's no Avelus on Tzom Gedalia. These are all related to the Chumei Samigdash. There's no Avelus on Asar B'Teves. These are Tzomais. Tisha B'Av, for a Tekufa in our history, was a Yoim Tzom. A Yoim Tzom demands that we recite after Shemona Esrei Selichos, which are compositions that embellish the theme of the Yud Gimel Midos Torachamim. And then times changed, and it became accepted. We're not going to focus on Slicha. We're going to focus on Churban, as Mr. Rapport said, on Avelos. And we're not asking for forgiveness. We're asking. We are experiencing Avelus in order to appreciate what we lost. Let me tell you another idea which ties into this. This is sort of an entirely different sefer. And he explains, I don't know the name of the sefer, I know the Mechaber, but let me just tell you the site. What is the difference between mourning over an individual, a family member, versus mourning over the Beis HaMikdash? There's two different types of Avelus. So first of all, practically speaking, when we're dealing with Avelos, right, we spoke about this, is an Avelos for an individual, the Avelos starts out with an intensity, and as time passes, it gets lighter and lighter. There's a Zman of Aninus, which is the most intense moment, which then goes down to a lighter moment of Shiva, and then turns into Shloshim, and then turns into Yud Bei Shana, and then it's the yard site. The moment when a relative leaves this world, there is an intensity. And that intensity gradually gets lighter and lighter. During Aninus, a person is exempt from all mitzvahs. Then there is Shiva. Shiva is heavy, serious. Within the Shiva, there is the first 3 days and the remaining days. And then there is Shloshim. And then there is Yud Bei Shana. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, it's just the opposite. When we get in 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av, there are some limited restrictions that come to us. You're not allowed to take a haircut or different minhagim. You don't listen to music. You don't buy things where we make a shechianu. Then as we come to Chodesh Av, the restrictions are intensified. Then when we come to Shavua Shechal Boy, there are more restrictions. Then you come to Erev Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, it gets more and more intense. We're going in the opposite direction. Why is that so? So there are many reasons for this, but this Sefer says something a little bit different than I'm used to hearing. And he said when a person mourns over the loss of a relative, the process of Avelos is a process of saying goodbye. It's a process of departure. This person went to Shemayim, we're saying goodbye. And there's a process of how you say goodbye. Avelos over the Churban Beis HaMikdash is not goodbye. It's to reconnect. It's to reattach yourself. It is coming close. It's saying hello. There's no one here. The Beis HaMikdash is in Shemayim. The neshama of the Beis HaMikdash is gone. Now, it's 3 weeks. 3 weeks before. Oh, let us familiarize ourselves with this neshama. Then we get to Chodesh Av. Oh, he's coming close. We know you better. Now we come to Shavua Shechal. Oh, we're even closer to you. Tisha B'Av. The mace is right in front of us. Mincha is Tchiyas HaMeisim. Just the opposite. The process of Avelos, Tisha B'Av Chazal say, Tisha B'Av mourning is Meisoy Mutal Lefanav. That's pretty good. The body is here. The body didn't decompose. The bones are intact. By a funeral, the mace is there, right? The mace is there. A year later, the mace is dust. 3 weeks right now, before Tisha B'Av, before the 3 weeks, where is the mace? Where is he? In Shemayim, far, far away. Guf? The guf is dust. There is no guf. All of a sudden, we come 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av, you know, the mace has come back. The Nesham is hovering. Comes Chodesh Av, you feel it even more. Shavua Shechal Boy, closer, Erev Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av, the mace is right here in front of us. Meisoy mutal lefonav. The body has been recomposed. The guf has been recomposed. The only thing is that it has not a pulse. It's missing a pulse. And then comes the gemar of Tisha B'Av, mincha, the moment of chatzos, when you get up. You know why you get up? Because tchiyas hameisim. Now the dead body begins to talk. He's here. The process of Avelus of the Churban Beis HaMikdash is not to say goodbye. It's to say hello. It's a process of familiarizing yourself with what has happened. At a certain point in time in Jewish history, Chazal came to the realization, it's now time for Mashiach to come. We're done. There was an era for 1,000 years. The Mikdash has been destroyed. It ain't coming back so quickly. Mashiach is not coming so quickly. No, we have to be Misabel. It's Slichas, we did not Eris. Now in history has begun, even 1,000 years ago, it's now the beginning of the Ikvasa de Mashiach. And the Ikvasa de Mashiach is Tchiyas HaMeisim for the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, no longer was it decided that the theme of Tisha B'Av should be a theme of Slichais, Chotosi, Avisi, Pashati, Hashem, Hashem. We're done with that already. What have the Jewish people not already suffered that they need more atonement? After all the tzaras of Klal Yisrael, the Slichais are done. Klozim Megareva. Everyone knows what the Klozim Megareva. When they lay in the Teichacha, he demanded from the Baal Kriya to lay it as loud as he possibly could. Why? Why do you lay it quietly? It shouldn't happen. What do you mean it shouldn't happen? It happened already. It happened. What are you waiting for? What more is going to happen? It wasn't the Holocaust. There weren't the Crusades. There wasn't Inquisition. the warning, the pogroms. We're done with this already. We're done with the slichas. Now it's time for the geula. And the avelus of Tisha B'Av is the reversal, basically. It's familiarize yourself with the neshama, because the neshama is coming back. So it transferred from slichas to a reverse avelus. And that demands that you get rid of the slichas. No more Hashem, Hashem. You don't lay in the morning vayichal. Instead, we have a different collection of piyutim that fall in a different category called kinos. And these kinos are patterned after the ultimate kino of Yirmiyah, the Sefer HaKinos. Megillah. Oh my gosh, it's 12:12. I didn't realize how late it is. I'm sorry, I'm keeping you so long. I have mamash, I have no idea it's so late already. This is the major yisoid of kinos. It's not slichos. It is a removal. It's a reversal to familiarize. So Mishnah, we'll talk more about this tomorrow.
Take one.